Chapter 131. Happens that the parties were involved together, and what secret lay at the bottom of the whole affair perplexed him very much. Tom had been sure of his taking some interest in the matter, but was not prepared for the strong interest he showed. It held John Westlock to the subject even after Ruth had left the room, and evidently made him anxious to pursue it further than as a mere subject of conversation. "I shall remonstrate with my landlord, of course," said Tom, "though he is a very singular secret sort of man, and not likely to afford me much satisfaction, even if he knew what was in the letter." "Which you may swear he did," John interposed. "You think so?" "I am certain of it." Said Tom, "I shall remonstrate with him when I see him. He goes in and out in a strange way, but I will try to catch him tomorrow morning on his having asked me to execute such an unpleasant commission. And I have been thinking, John, that if I went down to Mrs. What's-her-name's in the city, where I was before, you know, Mrs. Todgers, tomorrow morning, I might find poor Mercy Pecksniff there, perhaps, and be able to explain to her how I came to have any hand in the business." "You are perfectly right, Tom," returned his friend, after a short interval of reflection. "You cannot do better. It is quite clear to me that whatever the business is, there is little good in it, and it is so desirable for you to disentangle yourself from any appearance of willful connection with it, that I would counsel you to see her husband, if you can, and wash your hands of it by a plain statement of the facts. I have a misgiving that there is something dark at work here, Tom. I will tell you why, at another time, when I have made an inquiry or two myself." All this sounded very mysterious to Tom Pinch. But as he knew he could rely upon his friend, he resolved to follow this advice. "Ah, but it would have been a good thing to have had a coat of invisibility, wherein to have watched little Ruth, when she was left to herself in John Westlock's chambers, and John and her brother were talking thus, over their wine. The gentle way in which he tried to get up a little conversation with the fiery-faced matron in the crunched bonnet, who was waiting to attend her, after making a desperate rally in regard of her dress, and attiring herself in a washed-out yellow gown with sprigs of the same upon it, so that it looked like a tessellated work of pats of butter. That would have been pleasant." The grim and griffin-like inflexibility with which the fiery-faced matron repelled these engaging advances, as proceeding from a hostile and dangerous power, who could have no business there, unless it were to deprive her of a customer, or suggest what became of the self-consuming tea and sugar, and other general trifles. That would have been agreeable. The bashful, winning, glorious curiosity with which little Ruth, when fiery-face was gone, peeped into the books and knick-knacks that were lying about, and had a particular interest in some delicate paper matches on the chimney-piece, wondering who could have made them. That would have been worth seeing. The faltering hand with which she tied those flowers together, with which, almost blushing at her own fair self as imaged in the glass, she arranged them in her breast, and looking at them with her head aside, now half resolved to take them out again, now half resolved to leave them where they were. That would have been delightful. John seemed to think it all delightful, for coming in with Tom to tea, he took his seat beside her like a man enchanted. And when the tea service had been removed, and Tom, sitting down at the piano, became absorbed in some of his old organ tunes, he was still beside her at the open window, looking out upon the twilight. "There is little enough to see in Furnival's Inn. It is a shady, quiet place, echoing to the footsteps of the stragglers who have business there, and rather monotonous and gloomy on summer evenings. What gave it such a charm to them, that they remained at the window as unconscious of the flight of time as Tom himself, the dreamer, while the melodies which had so often soothed his spirit were hovering again about him? What power infused into the fading light, the gathering darkness, the stars that here and there appeared, the evening air, the city's hum and stir, the very chiming of the old church clocks, such exquisite enthrallment, that the divinest regions of the earth spread out before their eyes could not have held them captive in a stronger chain? The shadows deepened, deepened, and the room became quite dark. Still Tom's fingers wandered over the keys of the piano, and still the window had its pair of tenants. At length, her hand upon his shoulder, and her breath upon his forehead, roused Tom from his reverie. "Dear me! Apostrophe, apostrophe," he cried, desisting with a start. "I am afraid I have been very inconsiderate and unpolite." Apostrophe, Tom little thought how much consideration and politeness he had shown. "Sing something to us, my dear," apostrophe said Tom. "Let us hear your voice. Come." Apostrophe, apostrophe, John Westlock added his entreaties with such earnestness that a flinty heart alone could have resisted them. Hers was not a flinty heart. Oh, dear no. Quite another thing. So down she sat, and in a pleasant voice began to sing the ballads Tom loved well. Old rhyming stories, with here and there a pause for a few simple chords, such as a harper might have sounded in the ancient time, while looking upward for the current of some half-remembered legend. Words of old poets, wedded to such measures, that the strain of music might have been the poet's breath, giving utterance and expression to his thoughts. And now a melody, so joyous and light-hearted, that the singer seemed incapable of sadness, until in her inconstancy, oh wicked little singer, she relapsed, and broke the listener's hearts again. These were the simple means she used to please them. And that these simple means prevailed, and she did please them, let the still darkened chamber, and its long-deferred illumination witness. The candles came at last, and it was time for moving homeward. Cutting paper carefully, and rolling it about the stalks of those same flowers, occasioned some delay, but even this was done in time, and Ruth was ready. "Good night," apostrophe apostrophe said Tom. "A memorable and delightful visit, John." "Good night," apostrophe apostrophe, John thought he would walk with them. "No, no, don't," apostrophe said Tom. "What nonsense. We can get home very well alone. I couldn't think of taking you out." Apostrophe, "but John said he would rather." "Are you sure you would rather?" Apostrophe, apostrophe said Tom. "I am afraid you only say so out of politeness." Apostrophe, John being quite sure, gave his arm to Ruth, and led her out. Fiery Face, who was again in attendance, acknowledged her departure with so cold a curtsy that it was hardly visible, and cut Tom dead. Their host was bent on walking the whole distance, and would not listen to Tom's dissuasions. Happy time, happy walk, happy parting, happy dreams. But there are some sweet day dreams, so there are that put the visions of the night to shame. Busily the temple fountain murmured in the moonlight, while Ruth lay sleeping, with her flowers beside her, and John Westlock sketched a portrait whose? From memory. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.